Hello, friends. Thanks for tuning in. It's another episode of What a Week, where Scott Lay and I discuss the most relevant issues in California politics and policy today. This week, we touch on the aftermath of the district attorney's decision in the Stephon Clark case, Governor Newsom's decision on the death penalty, and the legislative push for a constitutional amendment. We also discuss the cash positions of both parties relative to their assets and obligations. We cover many other issues as well, too many to name here, so you'll have to tune in. Thanks again for joining the conversation. Don't forget to email or tweet us with topics you'd like covered in next week's show.
3, 2, 1. It's the luck of the Irish, but I, of course, am all in black. That's just how I roll. It's Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. What a week.
What a week what it's a week. Been.
Yeah, I, of course, I'm Jabron Maciel, my co-host here, Scott Lay. Rocking the new shirt, Immigrants Feed America.
And, you know, let's just make that clear.
So here you go.
That's me. I get a kiss. I get a kiss from Gibran.
That's me. I'm the immigrant.
But, yeah, immigrants also are doctors, lawyers, teachers, professors, and they teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and they rock the pod.
And they rock the pod. Yeah, so, thanks for the – you know, I saw the shout-out that you put into the Nooner for ESAC BJJ. Yeah. So thank you for that. Those impressions add up. Let me tell you quickly, folks, we'll get into politics just very quickly. I got a student of mine who runs a marketing company, Gold Rush Getaways Travels. So the value proposition is basically, if you can leave at the drop of a hat or on very short notice, Gold Rush Getaways will help you score some killer deals. And so they advertise in the program at Rayleigh Field for the River Cats and whatnot. And he's like, hey, you know what? I got this 2-inch square of empty space in my ad. I'm going to see if I can sneak in the ESAC BJJ logo on the program.
And you just have to make sure that the second J is in that.
Yeah. that is
like proofreading.
Yeah.
Very important. Well, I'm going to acknowledge that I am drinking out of a hard plastics, but Starbucks cup. And the girl in front of me, I was telling Gibran that the girl in front of me was ordering a tall in a grande cup for a coworker. Mm-hmm. And the barista put a tall in a venti cup. And the woman in front of me in line is like, that doesn't work. I'm like, it's the same amount of liquid. So she insisted that the barista pour the tall that was in a venti cup into a grande cup, still the same amount of liquid. And here I am paying $10 for a hard plastic, hard straw
tumbler. That's so funny. Yeah, you know, it's she wasted 3 cups in that transaction?
Something
that's
like
so
that.
That's so ridiculous. But just to kind of quickly reflect on the things that folks are willing to do for us, to support us in this example, like what my buddy was doing for me to put me in the program. And then for you all that are listening, you know, the messages that you send us, the little shout outs, the Facebook messages, the emails to the Nooner, we get those and it keeps us going. Those likes, subscribes, comments, that's what keeps us going.
And we know that this is a new format for a lot of people. Yeah. I've been doing podcasts since, you know, they were put on like, you know, cassettes.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, but for a lot of people, it's still political podcasts or something new. It's they may thing. Have been the gateway drug, maybe Pod Save America or a conservative one. And we get that, but we want your feedback to know what you want to hear from us when we get together to do What a Week or when we have guests.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott, how many stars should they rate us on iTunes?
All of them.
All
I think
of them.
Five.
I think that's five.
I don't know. Rated, people rated are always saying that, and iTunes, I never do guys. It.
Hey, so what a week, man. You weren't feeling too good last week, and so I think it's actually probably good to let last week's big story simmer a little bit before we get to it, and that was Stephon Clark. Okay,
and this is the big weekend.
Yeah, and this is the big weekend. Is there? They're remembering his life, right? Mm-hmm. And then also. You know, of course, the death penalty and Gavin Newsom, water. We're going to do cash on hand for both parties. And the Republican Party is behind on its bills. Well, it's not behind on its bills, but it's upside down. Right? It's a negative. It's got more debt than it has cash on hand.
If you ask their lawyers or their consultants or their printers, they're behind on their bills. When you have over, we'll get to
aren't
the numbers.
Aren't they supposed to be the ones that are good at business? What happened?
Well, yeah, and they're also renters. The Democratic Party owns their headquarters, and the Republican Party rents, and so the on the balance sheet for the Democratic Party is $500,000 in non-cash assets. That would be their building over next to my place.
Got it. Are they going to get booted?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how much space they actually have right now, but the staff is nothing like what the Democratic Party has, even after Democratic Party.
Well, you could probably run the whole thing out of this living room.
Well, yeah. You could host, bring Jessica on. I mean, she seems like she's great. Jessica Patterson, new California GOP chair. And I think she's going to be very good for the party, but they have to gain trust to get big money back in. I mean, the Democratic Party, we'll get to the totals, but almost every day they're filing $100,000 or more in contributions, big money coming in.
They're just making it rain.
They really are.
Yeah. You know, this was kind of on our outline here too. And why don't we just get to it since we're talking about the Republican Party. The New Way Summit wrapped up last week. It was a big to-do here in town.
I wore a suit.
You wore a suit?
I had to like dust off my suit.
Get the cobwebs out.
Mike Madrid was there.
The moths come flying out.
Yeah. So I saw Mike Madrid, who was a previous guest on this pod. I saw him at the USC networking dinner with students the night before.
Oh, yeah.
And no, actually, I take that back. I wore the suit the night before. And Mikey says, "You own a suit." And truly, I actually had to throw away a bunch of my suits because I hadn't worn them for so long.
I just did the same thing.
The moths got to them. They're too big. I mean, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But that they're too big. But that's what Mikey said. So the next day, I had to wear my The Nooner sweatshirt. And Mikey showed up in jeans to both events.
Very cool.
So I... just suits don't belong in this town.
Yeah.
Or at this pod. I think it's
for you.
It's
you
dark
and I.
It's dark tees now.
Yeah. I think this works better for us. Yeah.
And the listeners don't know that we actually don't wear shoes. Maybe or pants.
Or pants. Yeah, just, who knows? Yeah. I'm just kidding. Hey, so the New Way Summit was supposed to, okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, New Way is supposed to be this idea is like, hey, the Republican Party isn't working in California. The Trump brand is toxic to a lot of people. Nonetheless, this growth and decline to state and probably some alienated Democrats like myself are seeking a new way. So here we go, right? Like a brand of conservatism that is genuine, that is inclusive, and that kind of can look like what California looks like in terms of diversity. So who do they bring in to be the keynote speaker? Bill Kristol, who looks like the fucking Monopoly man.
He does.
Doesn't he?
But he also, like...
I mean, it's just a bunch of white boys and girls, right?
It,
up on
it
stage.
It was. Yeah. Well, they did have Cassandra Pai, former Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's fair.
Inner
that's
circle
right. Yeah,
person
I don't want to, you know...
advocate.
And I don't want to demean the substance of what they're trying to do. But, and I'm the last one to really be, like, all about diverse. Like, you know, I don't care. Like, you get the best people for the job. That's my view. But it's just kind of funny. Like, if you're going to be on message, be on message with... Have your speakers aligned with your message.
They're going to get Tucker Carlson?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Pat Buchanan, I hear his schedule's probably free.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Bill Kristol was probably not too expensive. And he actually had a good message for those that hate Trump.
He's one of the most anti-immigrant guys that I can think of, though, isn't he?
I don't listen to him.
Okay.
And
I just listened to this talk that he had with Victor Davis Hanson, and he was just like...
Well, and the funny thing about New Way California is at the apex of it, late in the morning, it was a 9 a.m. until noon event. Arnold Schwarzenegger's plane wasn't working, so he had to get a second plane. So he was running late. Meanwhile, this was when Attorney General Javier Becerra was announcing the recommendations of the Department of Justice on Stephon Clark.
Right.
And so... the journalists and the quasi-journalists, well, no, all of a sudden we had our AirPods or other headphones on and we're all watching Javier Becerra on our screen and not the summit itself.
Yeah.
And I think that was over by the time Arnold got there. Mm. And fortunately, Arnold did get a second plane.
Hey, before we get into the Stephon Clark stuff and... Before we go there, let me linger on New Way here a little bit. Let me ask you this. It's a 3-hour deal once a year.
Right.
What's the point?
Well, they are putting out consistent messaging. I mean, they're, you know, Chad Mays, assembly member, just put out, was it yesterday or today? Days run, kind of run together in this business. But he put out a call for bipartisan climate, a bipartisan climate agenda, which is obviously very different than the national GOP. And I haven't really heard other state GOP folks weighing in on that. Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger is still a Republican, and obviously that's his number one issue. But it isn't for other GOP leaders. You know, environmental agenda is CEQA reform, California Environmental Quality Act, which I agree needs its reform because of abuse by
labor unions, NIMBYs, everybody,
you know, everybody. All these people that have nothing to do with the environment. I think that's why we need CEQA reform. That's not any solution to climate change itself.
Yeah, I mean, what a way to weaponize like the American legal system, right?
Oh, it's quite bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just reading. I wrote about the AIDS Healthcare Foundation today, which is sounds very nice and philanthropic, but it's really an entrepreneurial organization that operates a bunch of online and licenses online pharmacies. And so,
aren't they the ones that were doing the condom bill too?
Yes,
there was some shady business about the condom deal and like the way that the finances kind of worked back for them or something like that.
But they and so they were the leading funder for Prop 10, the rent control measure.
Yeah, what was that about? Connect the dots, Scott.
They are constantly in battles with developers in Los Angeles, and so I bring up the CEQA issue because I was reading an article about a current issue of a fight over a development in Hollywood that's been, I think, authorized by the Los Angeles City Council, and AIDS Healthcare Foundation has joined with others to file a CEQA lawsuit.
Okay, got it.
It's about, they talk about density, and but it comes down to NIMBY stuff, and I think AIDS Healthcare Foundation has properties or property rights that they're trying to protect.
Oh, got it. Got it. Got it.
You know, meanwhile, the what sounds like a good-natured nonprofit is really a philanthropic, I'm sorry, an entrepreneurial nonprofit that pays its CEO over $400,000 a year. You know, that doesn't really pass the smell test.
I mean,
they're paying him like a pharmaceutical executive.
To rail against the pharmaceutical executives.
Well, yeah.
We've so, officially entered the upside down.
So in Prop 10, so they back Prop 10. So one of the entities that spent money against Prop 10, about $500,000, I want to say, was Pharma, the Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, just to get back at AIDS Healthcare Foundation because AIDS Healthcare Foundation sponsored an initiative to have price caps on prescription drugs.
So just totally devoid of the actual substance of the proposition. Yeah. It was just a big fuck you.
Right, exactly. And this is the CEQA problem. This happens all the time.
With CEQA.
These people are just trying to fuck each other with climate change. I mean, housing and transportation, those are tough issues, difficult issues as we're seeing right now in the legislature. You know, that is climate change related housing availability related. Well, I mean, it's true substantive issues. Lawsuits don't get there.
Yeah, yeah. We should probably have Senator Wiener on at some point. Senator Wiener, if you want to come on and talk about your bill.
You're going to need a lower chair.
Yeah, probably. Or you and I will have to sit on high chairs or something.
6'8", I think.
Yeah. He's a tall dude.
Yeah. But he's a very smart dude and working on tough issues.
Blisteringly smart, yeah. You know, actually, he is the number one influencer in the state legislature on Twitter. Oh, he's got something like 45,000 followers. What? I mean, no one comes close, you know.
Right. But half of those hate him,
yeah.
But that's, you know, we all aspire to that, right? We want a 50-50 ratio of people that love us and hate us.
Well, you know, it's funny because from a social media, like, you essentially, all you're doing is you're monetizing eyeballs on you, you know, whether directly or indirectly through, you know, it helps you get in the media or whatever, right? Hate is just as powerful of an emotion as love, and in fact is more, draws in more viewers, you know?
Right.
I feel, not to beat this dead horse, but that's how Trump won the presidency. You know, you have this like crazy, you know, 16 candidate field, and the field is filled with 16 protagonists, rather 15 protagonists and one antagonist. Who are you naturally going to sympathize with? Well, the one antagonist. Because like when you start narrowing down the field, you're going to be left with any one of these protagonists, any one of these nice guys in a suit, and the one guy who's like, who's antagonizing the whole system, you know? And like, if you look at the, like the last 12 years, you know, from 8 years of Barack Obama and then Donald Trump winning in 2016, the message could not be clearer from the American electorate. We're ready for a change.
So are you suggesting that Bernie Sanders, who just got stitches on his head after running into the shower door this morning.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Are
you suggesting that that Bernie will automatically will get again. It because he's a curmudgeon? I mean,
yeah.
He's got the curmudgeon part of him.
That curmudgeon thing is...
Whereas everybody else is kissing ass and kissing babies.
Yeah, kissing ass and kissing babies is no way to win this election, I think. Yeah. Honestly. I think people are tired of it. I think that's... We didn't talk too much about it, but that's really what was so damning about the Kamala Harris, like, oh, I listened to Snoop and Tupac. No, you didn't. And we know that you didn't because the basic math doesn't add up. And you're out here lying through your teeth after 200 years of American politicians lying through their teeth to us, and we're fucking tired of it.
Well, she either lied about when she smoked pot or what music she was listening to.
Either one is possible, you know? and let me tell you, everybody else that ran into her while they were smoking pot got 10 years in prison. Okay? So... I think that that was really what was damning about the whole thing, is that it signaled the lack of authenticity. And I, you know, I'm calling it now, and everybody, you know, I'll eat my hat if I'm wrong. But the next president, whether it's Donald Trump again or someone on the Democratic side, is going to be someone who is, I think, perceived to be as a very genuine character, whether it be, you know, Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker. I personally like Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
I personally like the universal basic income thing. I think it's time. But
well, people like Pete. I mean, they're Pete butt gig, something like that.
What?
I saw a phonetic. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
Okay.
He's the kid. He's the 37-year-old.
Oh, he's just a regular guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Veteran.
People
born
like that.
There.
People like that, yeah.
Democrat, gay, Indiana, Mike
regular
Pence
dude.
Territory. People like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was the issue. I think that it was like when Hillary said that she carries around Tabasco sauce in her purse, and like everyone's like, "No, you don't, get out of here. Come on." She should have known better.
Yeah.
I carry around Tabasco sauce in my purse. You know, I don't know. I'm gonna get agitated, and we shouldn't spend time on this.
But we should spend time on saying Happy St. Patrick's Day, Robert Francis O'Rourke. Congratulations on jumping into the presidential fray.
Who the fuck is that guy?
That's Beto.
Oh, Beto. Yeah.
Beto.
Yeah, happy. Yeah.
Robert Francis O'Rourke.
Oh, you know, only a white guy could lose and then like seek a promotion afterwards. Like what, you know, when you ask like what is white male privilege, it's losing an election and then thinking you like deserve to run for the next one.
So those kids of the rich people that bought admission to colleges, are those kids automatic like summa cum laude or something?
Yeah,
or is that magna cum laude? I don't even know what the hell. I think I made the dean's list once.
Yeah. So are you a Beto guy?
No. I don't know.
You're still, I get it. Yeah.
I did get another piece of swag this week. So I do have a Kamala hat because it looks cool. It looks like you put a marijuana leaf right on it. It's
now
got
that
the colors.
As soon as Kamala puts a marijuana leaf, you know, then, behind her name, I'm
and then
I'm buying
I got a
shirt.
Cory Booker shirt this week that says "We Rise," and then in the back it says www.corybooker.com. Oh, yeah. But it's like "We Rise." That's cool.
Andrew Yang has something like 72 policy positions on his website.
Yeah,
and no other presidential candidates are even close to that.
Yeah,
so you know these folks are.
And would you advise somebody to have 72 policy positions on their website?
Yeah, maybe. Hmm. Maybe, yeah. Maybe I would. You know, I don't know, because I can't tell. I can't tell what the difference is between... All I can tell about Kamala Harris versus Cory Booker versus Beto is that they're just like virtue signaling to like these different tribalistic gangs within the Democratic Party, and all these people are just waving their flags. No, I like the white guy from Texas. No, I like the Hispanic guy from Texas. No, I like the sister from California. No, I like Cory. Like, but there's no, like, I don't know what the substantive policy differences are between.
I like Yang, but
you know,
once you get into that many policy positions, it's like 1992. Now listen here. with Ross Perot.
Yeah, now, you know what?
We're gonna have like charts and crap.
Yeah, he is gonna have charts. I think you know, but you know,
and it'd be Gavin Newsom. It'd be like Gavin Newsom's budget unveiling that lasted 2 hours.
Yeah, he's fucking
charts.
Killing it, right? I mean, you can kill it that way as long as you convince people that you're substantive and that you have a good heart and that, you know. Yeah, I think you can kill it that way. And I guess the only thing I would say is, what is the exact opposite of Donald Trump? It's an Asian dude that likes numbers.
That's true.
Yeah, you know. So I think he matches up particularly well against
Trump. I can't wait. Does he have a nickname yet from Trump? Kamala doesn't have one either.
No,
so.
I think he'll wait to drop those, but it'll probably be like Comrade Yang. or Chairman Yang or something that's kind of racially tinged.
I bet.
You know, yeah. and then kind of gives you the fear of socialism on the other side. Right. But you know, Yang said something really interesting about universal basic income. He said it's not socialism, it's capitalism that doesn't start at zero. Because you're not totally taken care of.
Right.
You know, you're still price sensitive. Like you're not like burgers can't go to $10 a burger or they can't double in price because you're like all other factors in competition remain the same.
Right.
It just means you have like a basic subsistence amount of money.
And we're going to see how that works. Was it 100 people in Stockton are now getting
$500 debit
month?
Cards. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it works. Do you have any initial reaction to that or?
You know, I'm willing to, you know, to see Stockton trying something.
Yeah.
You know, is significant. You know, my ex is from Stockton, so I know the city well. And you know, it was hit so hard by the housing crunch. They had all these great promises, and you know, developers that want to come in and do all this cool stuff,
dude.
And they just all disappeared. So, Michael Tubbs, go for it. I hope it works out.
Yeah, dude, these developers will sell their firstborn.
Oh yeah,
they don't. You know.
Yeah,
I mean the way they opened up Natomas for development—that's a floodplain,
right?
They don't care if you flood to death out there.
Well, fortunately, that's been largely resolved now because of the levee improvements.
Yeah.
So they're starting to build again out there, but that's also sprawl. You know, we should be doing more infill.
You know, like
your place, like my place. You know, that's infill.
Yeah, come live with the people of Sacramento. What are you so afraid of? You know, actually, let me give a. Speaking of people of Sacramento. Let me give a quick shout out to Black Lives Matter for doing the thing that makes the most sense that that I've seen in a while, and protesting in East Sacramento. Good
was,
for you.
That was huge.
That was smart. You know, I mean, you know, I can't get behind keying the cars. That was probably just a few bad apples. You know, stupid.
That happens at the 10th and L parking lot every afternoon.
Yeah, that happens
where all the lobbyists park.
Yeah, that happens anytime people get together. So I'm not necessarily going to blame them for that, but it's not a good look. Right. I can't get behind blocking the freeway. That was fucking stupid last year. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it again. It alienates people who want to support you. And it just pisses people off. But going to the heart of like white privileged neighborhoods that are complicit in, in what's happening to your community. Fuck yeah. Go shut it down again. Go shut it down all you want. You know?
Could you imagine if LA riots had not been between African-Americans who were mad at the cops who went after Korean Americans.
Yeah, what the fuck does that
mean? I mean, they should have gone to Brentwood.
Go to white complicit neighborhoods, yeah. Go to and Black Lives Matter. Go to Fair Oaks. Go to Roseville. Go shut down El Dorado Hills. I know we're getting farther and farther away from the city core, but you know the point remains is like, you know, you march from what was it, the police station on Fruit Ridge or something or Freeport? You know, those are your people. That's your constituency already.
They've tried
to
shut down the police station there twice. That's not where the East Sac protest started. That was at
I'm just saying they went to
Trader Joe's, which is
good for them. Yeah, I support that. Go to the Nugget. Go get in those fucking people's faces because they are complicit while your folks are dying. And I just think that makes so much more sense. And I really want to applaud them for that because that makes sense. Blocking the freeway doesn't. Don't do it again. I'll slam you for it.
And don't shut it down traffic where state employees are leaving the office buildings and secretaries in the law firms that are trying to get out to pick up their child after school or at daycare.
Yeah, what the fuck, man? That doesn't make any sense.
They got the message, though. They understood that they lost a lot of natural allies last year by how they executed their protests.
Yeah.
So this weekend is...
Dude, in my heart, I want to be with them. Yeah. In my heart, I want to be with them. But then you go off and you do some goofy bullshit, like block the freeway. And it's like, I can't be with you.
Well, they were shouting. I was covering it. And
Tanya Faison's Facebook cover photo, last time I tried to reach out to her, was this guy standing on top of a cop car that said, and with a sign that said, fuck the police.
Yeah.
So I don't think that, you know, I think that person in particular is not someone who's trying to have constructive dialogue.
Hey, don't diss NWA, man.
Yeah.
You know, from back in the day. But they are doing Legacy Weekend this weekend, starting this evening.
Since I'm agitated and I'm on a good one, let me just take a moment to say, you know, D.A. Schubert, you should have known better than to release those private text messages and assassinate the character of this young man. There's no reason to do that. If you're not gonna press charges, don't press charges. Just take the political hit. You know you're gonna take it anyways. Don't try to mitigate the damage by embarrassing his legacy in front of the community. That's disgusting. You ought to know better. I'm actually a fan of your work and what you did with the East Area Rapist stuff. Like, I'm a fan of you generally. But there's no reason to do that. And, you know, you should be a little bit embarrassed for that. That was disgusting.
Yeah. So Legacy Weekend, Monday is the 1 year anniversary of the shooting death of Stephon Clark. He was 20 bullets were fired. He was hit 8 times. They thought
that means 12 bullets. That means 12 bullets went into adjacent houses.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
It's that's reckless in and of itself. It's
fucking crazy.
He was holding a cell phone. Allegedly there was and it looked like from body cam, there was a flash, and they said they thought it was gunfire. That's why, Anne-Marie Schubert did not press charges, but, the city is going to pay out significantly in civil liabilities to the family. But, you know, since that shooting, there have been, I believe, 3 other suspicious deaths of African-American men at the hands of SAC PD. And that's what, so this is well beyond Stephon Clark. So while this weekend,
yeah, you know,
they're remembering him.
Yeah.
Monday's the anniversary, starting tonight down in Meadowview where the incident occurred. And then they're doing a mother's brunch tomorrow. Sunday could be the volatile day because they're gathering it from 3 to 9 p.m. for a day of peace and love pop-ups. Well, to me, pop-ups says...
pop-ups mean shutdowns.
That's protest.
Pop-up means shutdown.
Yeah. It's not a new restaurant.
And we're gonna pop up in front of the Trader Joe's and shut your ass down.
You know, no tofu for you. And then there's a church service on Monday. Now, the Reverend Al Sharpton, who happens to be in town for something else, is doing an event on the Capitol steps, I think on Sunday, which... will be interesting. He didn't rile people up when he was here last year.
Okay, since we're on this, let me. Damn it! I shouldn't have eaten that chocolate. So we're eating out of the chocolates that came with the Nooner mugs.
The Nooner mugs.
Hey,
chocolates.
Scott, how much was each one of these mugs?
It works out to $8.
Why?
Because they're union made and they're local from Berkeley.
That's right. So even though you don't see a union bug on it, this was made by Alliance Graphics in Berkeley. So, you know,
I don't know about Hershey's.
The Hershey's just came with them.
Yeah.
What a cool little package though. What a cool way to like support your community. Anyways, since we're still on the Stephon Clark, issue, a couple things come to mind. One, I understand from a constituency and community building perspective and a outrage funnel, why you would make the Black Lives Matter movement about specific incidents, like why you're holding onto like the Stephon Clark thing. Or why you're using that tragedy to call attention to the, you know. But there's a couple problems, I think, with that. One is there's no such thing as a perfect victim, right?
Right.
Everyone's kind of imperfect. If you were to shoot me while I was unarmed, you could dig up all sorts of shit about me, you know? And so that kind of naturally, by trying to hang the whole movement on one particular instance, or just kind of lurching from instance to instance, I feel like you lose the substance. You know, like you invite people who aren't going to agree with you to criticize the person who got shot. And two, you're going to like miss the broader policy numbers. It's like, hey, just, I didn't know that there's been 3 other questionable shootings, but it makes perfect sense, you know? So I'm just kind of trying to talk through this with you.
I don't
love that it's always about one person when it's really the whole community suffering.
Right. And on the no perfect person situation, that's why the city is going to end up paying out. There's been a lawsuit, civil lawsuit filed for $20 million in damages. The city will probably pay $2 to $3 million. And the reason is once you get those into those cops' files and backgrounds, you could find out some bad shit about them.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the liability skyrockets with in front of a jury.
So they're going to settle.
That's why the city will settle.
Another thing that kind of another thing that I wanted to get off my chest about this, after the Schubert decision came down, I saw a number of people saying, well, crying like foul injustice, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot. And I don't want to put anyone on blast as much as I just want to kind of ask the Sacramento community, especially the political community, who's always trying to virtue signal and plant their flag and be with this community and be with that community and kind of just put their own white noise out there, for lack of a better word. Okay. I saw a number of people crying injustice. And so I said to one person, well, let me get this straight. This person was like a local elected school board member. Obviously has, you know, building staffer, obviously has aspirations to do more. And she put out this stupid fucking Facebook post like, oh, I'm so saddened by the tragedy of, you know, Stephon Clark and the injustice of the decision today. And so I just wrote her back. I was like, hey, you know, you said you're saddened by the injustice of the decision today. So let me ask you very clearly. The decision is binary, whether to press charges or not. Right? That's the way these things go. You either press charges or you don't. It's a binary. There's nothing in the middle. So today, no charges were pressed. Are you telling me that justice to you would have been that charges were pressed against these officers? And of course, she didn't want to go there because she's a local elected official who wants to stay friendly with the police officers.
And may know what the law is. Marie Schubert was exactly right about the law.
She was right about the law.
Now, should the law be changed? We talked about that on a couple of previous podcasts. Yeah. I believe that there's going to be some sort of compromise between the two versions, one supported by civil rights groups, authored by Assemblymember Weber, and one authored by the police, which is sponsored by or authored by Senator Ana Caballero. So, you know, there's going to be some middle ground between those two bills. I think that's what the governor wants to see. He wants some changes. He's not siding with either of the two bills. But the fact is, the law is what it is.
The law is what
it is. And Anne-Marie Schubert can't, like, make up her own law. Now, did she screw up by sharing all those details? Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the problem to have. Only complain about that. Don't complain about the fact that she didn't press charges. Now it's in the hands of the civil suit.
I mean, it's just like, you know, just everyone's just lost their goddamn mind over this thing. Yeah. You know, with reason. It makes sense. It's a tragedy, you know. But, like, for someone to say, like, well, it's a tragedy, but I wish things would have gone differently. Okay, well, the way things could have gone differently was charges would have been pressed. Do you think that's justice? No, I don't want to say that either. Okay, well, you know, I think just as bad. Like, no, not even just as bad. Worse, like, actual harm can be caused to the situation when you put out your stupid fucking statements that don't say anything at all. When you pretend to be with both sides of the community when there's, in fact, a real cleavage here. And you're trying to, like, kind of be with everybody. It's like, no, like, the African-American community and the police community are at odds and will be for a while until there's real reform, you know? And for you to try and, you know, kind of muddy the waters and be with everybody and put out these statements that are fucking meaningless, you know, you're a community leader. Have the fucking courage. Just, you know, who's the city council member who put out that letter?
I don't remember which that one was.
The African American city council guy.
Alan?
What's it?
Yeah, Jennings.
Anyways, he put out a very substantive letter.
Yeah,
he put out a very substantive letter. Like, I guess that's what I'm saying is bravo.
Right.
Like, if you're gonna make a statement that, like, clearly comes down on once, because this is one of those things where you kind of got to pick a side. I don't know. Those are my thoughts.
There's also the phenomenon that the Sacramento City Council meeting for the second week in a row was shut down
by a white guy.
It wasn't.
Who was the guy who got up and stood up was a white guy?
No, African American guy named last name Clark, no relation to Stephon Clark.
Wasn't there a white guy who shut it down for a little while?
There was a white guy standing in the middle, but he wasn't the one.
He's not the
that
one
got up oh, on the, on okay, the dais okay. or the speaker's table. And this gets into an issue also that the black community feels like they're ignored and they have protests and the TV cameras don't come out. But what they do know is every city council meeting is going to be on television. And these aren't the leaders of Black Lives Matter that are showing up and making the most dramatic statements. But they know damn well that they're going to be recorded. They're being aired and they're being recorded by the news stations that don't have to pay for a cameraman to go out. I mean, and so for a community that feels ignored, you know, the city council meetings are the perfect place to go.
Oh, yeah.
And no, Daryl's trying to do what he can and say everybody gets to speak. But, you know, at the end of the day, Daryl's a weak mayor, not based on him, but based on the city charter.
Yeah.
You know, we're a weak mayor system. Largest city, I believe, in California, it's weak mayor. And so he really can't do anything other than to say, this meeting's over.
Yeah.
So he's done that twice in the last 2 weeks, instead of arresting the disruptor, which he had the right to do, but he feared that would lead to more violence in the council chambers.
You know, yeah, whatever, arrest them if you need to. I mean, at some point, the city has to be able to continue its business for the benefit of the people.
But right? Everybody's acknowledged that the 84 arrests, including journalists and members of the clergy, were absolutely wrong. It was just badly executed. They say they've changed their policies. We may see this weekend, frankly.
Let me tell you something about that journalist being arrested. God, what was his name?
Well, Dale Kasler was detained and released.
The Sackbee. Yeah, Dale Kasler. Yeah.
Right. There was
the older gentleman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Sac State Hornet journalist and a Sac Business Journal journalist were also, they were actually arrested because they didn't have editors available to call the city and say,
hey, let our folks out. Yeah. Let my people go.
You know what this lawsuit's going to be like?
Yeah. let me touch on that for a second, too. Man, I'm on fire today. Yeah, you know.
I heard you have a flight to catch, so we can't go too long today.
Yeah, okay. My dad got arrested protesting with, I think it was Cesar Chavez back in the day. I was raised by two journalists. You know, he tells the story like, man, can you believe I got arrested at these protests with the people? Like, he tells it like it was a cool story. Like, it was like an honor for him as a journalist to go through that. And what do you know? They let him out a few hours later.
Yeah.
That's what happened to the Sac B guy.
Well, it happened to everybody. Everybody was gone.
For people to get on Facebook and Twitter and be like, I stand with the press. Well, this is, you know, this is dictatorial monarchy stuff. No, it wasn't. They issued an order to disperse. The media has a right to stay there. But it's hard to tell who's who when you round everybody up. And so some people got rounded. Everyone's just trying to do their job.
The Hornet guy had a press pass and a shirt that said press on it.
Okay.
And what they did was they were detaining them by putting plastic zip ties around them so they couldn't record anymore. If they were pen and paper journalists, this would not have happened. It's because they had cameras and
police agencies
didn't want there to be video. And they know, frankly, that the legal repercussions are minimal. You know, it's not like a judge is going to award McClatchy Newspapers that owns the B $20 million for detaining Dale Kasler.
For an hour or whatever.
They'll say, you need to come up with a new policy and training for your cops. That's
Boom.
It.
Yeah.
That's First Amendment law in most cases. There are no damages.
Yeah, I mean, was it unfortunate? Yeah, but I mean, is it worth, you know, tearing away at the confidence and the trust that we have in the fabric of our society by putting out a statement like, oh, I can't believe this happened. It's such a tragedy. No, everybody lived. It's okay. They got detained for an hour. In a lot of cases, it was just they were just rounding everybody up. We don't live in a banana republic. We don't live in like North
Venezuela.
Korea. Venezuela. Yeah, you know, like everyone's just got to chill out. Like it was bad, but it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Okay, and this whole culture of victimhood that's overtaken the narrative on the left is, you know, disgusting and unproductive. I think death penalty. What do you got?
So this week, on Wednesday, Governor Gavin Newsom issued an executive order that gave a reprieve for 737 death row inmates. This applies only to those individuals that are currently on death row. It doesn't set aside the death penalty at all. That's in statute. That statute cannot be changed under the California State Constitution because of a ballot measure from 1972 called Prop 17. So all he did was grant a reprieve, which means that it's a delay in the execution of those individuals.
Until he's no longer the governor.
Until somebody rescinds that reprieve. It's different than the two other executive provisions in the Constitution, which would be a commutation, so changing it, let's say, from first-degree murder to manslaughter, where you couldn't have a death penalty. It actually changes the penalty because it changes the crime.
Right.
That's completely under the executive order. And of course, the word that I'm forgetting right now, the P word, which Manafort's hoping for. Why can't I?
Is it pardon? Is it the pardon word?
Okay, how much did I spend on law school? I was just looking at this afternoon to understand exactly what the difference was. But yeah, so it wasn't a pardon, which is actually an excuse saying the crime didn't exist.
It didn't even happen, right?
Right. Yeah. So now a judge can still sentence me to death. And each time that happens under Gavin Newsom's governorship, he has to issue a new reprieve, a delay in sentence. So he didn't change the law, as some people have suggested, because he can't. He doesn't have that authority.
He's just saying we're not going to spend the resources to pursue this while I'm governor.
He could have done more. He could have commutated the sentences and said,
But then he'd be commutating each individual person's sentence.
Exactly.
Which is more politically vulnerable.
Exactly.
As opposed to just saying, from an executive standpoint, this is costly to pursue.
Right.
It's ineffective. More people die waiting to try, awaiting all the appeals to exhaust themselves than they do by the hand of the state.
And people are, pay attention to death penalty cases in other states where they're waiting by the phone for the governor call. That's a reprieve. It's saying a governor's calling and saying, hold on, we found new DNA evidence or something.
Or I just
let's
don't have
give
the stomach
this
for
more
this,
time.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. It's a give this more time. So that's where it stands right now.
Wait, but I mean, they dismantled the electric chair. They took all that stuff out.
No, it's not an electric chair. Lethal injection.
Lethal, whatever. Yeah.
Which we didn't have the constitutional authority to actually use.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they're ripping all the equipment out.
Right.
So it's not like a temper. He's saying.
Oh, yeah. No,
he's saying, it's a reprieve at least until I'm done being governor.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Like, I'm not going to spend the resource. Like, from an executive power, because he gets to execute,
which is
right?
likely to be 8 years.
Which is likely to be 8 years.
The last governor to not be reelected to a second term was in 1942, Colbert Olson.
Well, Gray Davis, right?
No, he got elected
in
2002.
Term,
and then the next
right.
year after the rolling blackouts,
after only
a year, I think, was it Bill Simon, ran against him. I mean, it was a barn buster of a campaign in 2002.
Yeah.
But by 2003, we had the rolling blackouts. We had driver's licenses for illegals. Oh, my God. Now it's like, duh. I mean, it's amazing how things can change.
Yeah.
Arnold came in.
In one teenager's lifetime.
He blew up the box. And Arnold blew up the box and became the leading environmentalist in California.
Hey, so.
That ties into New Way.
Yeah. My immediate reaction on this is I don't really have a stance on this. I really see both sides of the argument in terms of I think that there's some families out there who are surviving victims of some of these heinous crimes, and we're expecting justice to be served. Now, there's probably just as many who are surviving victims of heinous crime and say, hey, please, not in my name. I get that too. Okay. But
and the Beeb just profiled five individuals that were exonerated, had been on death row.
Yeah.
And question.
You show me a perfect government program.
Right. Well, and I hate to say this because I'm going to draw anger, but that's okay, because that's what this issue is about. Without getting into the substantive issue of the death penalty, there was a thought that many of us had in law school, which is, don't make law based on victims.
Huh.
That they're not the guidance that you need. It's like, go talk to your priest, your minister, your reverend, and look into your heart. But the victims are too much invested in that particular case. And so, victims were paraded, through the media this week. But at the same time, we saw examples, including standing next to Governor Newsom, of victim families saying, not in our name. And we saw the examples of people that were exonerated had been on death row. So, I went to a law school with liberal criminal law professors. I acknowledge that. But let's talk about not the substance of the law, but what we have in front of us right now. The political implications, frankly, are everybody's running to their corner. I mean, people feel one way or another about the death penalty, period. There's no gray area, as you suggested.
Well, I'm kind of ambivalent about it, on I personally, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, you know how I feel. But now we have a situation where a constitutional amendment has been introduced in the legislature with several co-authors.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me, honestly. I feel oftentimes with public policy, you don't really get lasting utopias, but rather you just kind of lurch from one period of abundance to one period of crisis. I mean, that's just how society goes. You know, you've got 8 years of your preferred policy staying in effect. Why are you going to like screw your members to the wall and like make them go up on these tough votes, particularly when you're going to need 2/3 to even put it on the ballot? And we were just talking last podcast about how you really want to clear the ballot, you know? Like, why bring it up? You're going to get 8 years you're going to get 8 years of what you want. Why try?
So November 2020, we already have the referendum on bail reform.
Yeah.
Which
I don't get it.
And we have a ballot measure to undo the criminal justice reforms, including moving nonviolent drug felonies to misdemeanors that Jerry Brown championed. And he's got $15 million that he's ready to fight. This repeal that has already qualified for the ballot next year, but there's certainly conversations going on right now about how do we come to some tweaks to that Prop 47 criminal justice package that was approved by the voters. How do we make some tweaks enough to get the backers? The biggest one, which is the prison guards, how do we get them to pull out? The prison guards have already asked for $2 million back, and some people say that's because their contract is up July 1st, and Gavin Newsom's administration is negotiating.
They're trying to literally buy some goodwill. Yeah.
They are, and if they do that, that the campaign for that November 2020 ballot measure is out of money. So we have a very interesting conversation going on right now. ACA 12, let me just quickly.
Yeah.
So I mentioned Prop 17, 1972, it added to Article 1 of the Constitution. Article 1 is the Declaration of Rights of California, what you have a right to be or what rights you have. It added Article 27 to the Constitution that basically said that as of early 1972 laws that were on the books, those laws regarding the death penalty cannot be changed without going to the voter.
Right.
What had happened was the California Supreme Court, this is before the Rose Byrd era that people might have studied in the books, where three Supreme Court justices were recalled ostensibly because of death penalty rulings. So well before this, the California Supreme Court had held that under Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that preempted the state imposing the death penalty on anybody. And so there was an initiative sponsored by the prison guards with support of then-Governor George Duke Majan, opposed by a previous governor of the name Brown. The wrong Brown, but Pat Brown. Pat Brown. And you had this showdown at the ballot that added Section 27 that basically has frozen the death penalty laws in California at the 1972 levels. You can increase the penalties, you can't decrease them.
Right, right, right. So
ACA 12 would repeal that Section 27 of Article 1.
Saying you can decrease them.
Right. It would repeal it, and there'd still be the statutes on the book that impose the death penalty, but obviously if the legislature on a 2/3 vote of both houses put this on the ballot, remove Section 27, then most people believe they would actually remove the death penalty from most statutes.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, that would require a simple majority vote.
That's what they're trying to do. Right. So, you know, one of the things that really dismays me about this whole thing is, just like you said, everyone's running into their corner and kind of failing to see the other person's point of view. Especially, you know, I feel like I'm probably in a little bit of a liberal echo chamber on my social media. But everyone's like, you know,
you're just talking about me, huh?
Yeah, I'm just listening to your stuff. But you know, I mean, here I've actually pulled up. You know, what these Andre S. Alexander, 64 years old, Alexander and another man attempted to rob two people who turned out to be Secret Service agents on a stakeout, killing one of the agents in the process. Maria del Rocio Alfaro, 44, Alfaro stabbed to death the 9-year-old sister of a friend during a robbery of the girl's house. And so on and so forth. And so, like, my heart goes out to the victims' families who are seeking frankly, retribution, and who were told that they would get it and will now no longer get it. At the same time, I do understand the concerns of not wanting the state to hold someone down and kill them.
And the if the death penalty had never existed in California,
yeah,
if we were back to the pre-1972 situation, then they would have seen life without the possibility of parole, and they would have felt justice was done.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the problem. Is we added in this extra layer.
Well, the problem. Well, part of the problem is that the anti-death penalty people will never let well enough. Will never leave it alone. They will never give this fight up. Same thing with like abortion, right? Like everyone just runs to their corner, but the people on both sides will never give it up. And so like that's what's going on,
including the Catholic Church, which is
yeah
pro-life. On abortion and anti-death penalty.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. I mean, this is one thing that kind of dismays me too. If this, let's say they get the ballot proposition, they get the proposition on the ballot and it fails, right? Which we could say is a referendum on the death penalty, up or down, and the voters say, no, go ahead. You know, like we're going to decline to repeal these laws, right? Will Governor Newsom then put the lethal injection chair back in its place? Probably not. No. Right? Probably not. So I think that's part of...
Although by then, Governor Newsom would have been up for re-election, and the rest of us would profit that's the point where the voters are going to say whether or not this death penalty...
Well, no. I mean, people aren't single-issue voters, but I guess what I'm saying...
Ask Gray Davis and the blackouts.
Yeah, that was a unique situation, though.
Car tax blackouts and licenses for undocumented.
I guess all I'm saying is it seems like one side, like if they're gonna try and do this, and if they get it, great, and if they don't get it, well, they're not gonna like implement the will of the people, right? So it seems like one side is consistently welching on this issue.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying. And I get it, it's not like welching like you're refusing to pay a sports bet. Like I get this is much more serious and substantive than that, but I can definitely see how like the criminal justice hawks on the side of the issue are fucking pissed, because it like the last known vote on this thing, like the governor's like just refusing to execute the law of the land, if you will.
Right. So in 2016 we had Proposition 62, which passed by the voters by I want to say 6 or 7 points.
Yeah.
One issue that we're making this presumption that ACA 12 is going to pass with 2/3 votes of both houses to make it to the ballot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Well, you show me what members of the Democratic caucus are really dying to take a vote on this thing. Aside from the co-authors.
The co-authors.
Yeah, but aside, I mean,
there are others. I could, you know, I could name other liberals.
Is Sharon Quirk Silva dying to go up on this
thing? Of course
thing?
Not. I mean, yeah. Sharon Quirk Silva in 80-65 Fullerton.
Is Adam Gray
Fullerton,
dying?
Her, Prop 62 passed... failed by 18.4%. That's a pretty significant
gap. Isn't the speaker's job to protect their vulnerable members?
Absolutely.
What are you doing? Why? Why bring this up? You're going to get 8 years of what you want. Is Adam Gray dying to take this up?
No.
No. Why?
What
are you doing? Right. What are you doing?
My understanding is that the speaker is sounding out members right now about where they stand. Because he does it privately, because he doesn't want to have a big
my
war
sense.
In
my
the
sense is the members are sounding off on the speaker.
Yeah, well, yeah,
sounding off
stand
to the speaker
in
yeah.
the place where you no. but if you look at the 15 competitive state legislative races, 4 in the Senate and 11 in the state assembly, you know, we're talking an average of I wrote it today in the Noon. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but like 24%. The rejection of Prop 62 or retaining the death penalty, if you will. And that is huge. And a lot of people say that, or I said, a lot of people have responded that they were thinking the same thing. It's not like I'm novel. I just spent my time last night going through these numbers. And, you know, if I'm chief of staff, so if the speaker's job is to protect members,
right?
The chief of staff's job is also to protect the members. In vulnerable races, the chiefs of staff of a lot of these vulnerable members were put in there by the speaker's staff. They're there to guide the vulnerable members that are new to town about votes and
shepherd them through the pasture.
Yeah, and so all of the Democrats that are up for re-election next year, including new ones like Rebecca Bauer Cohn in AD16 in the Tri-Valley, like Christy Smith in my sister's district, AD38 in, down Santa Clarita, even returning members like Sabrina Cervantes in AD60 down in Corona. I can't imagine the speaker or their chiefs, you know, leaning on these members, let alone the speaker's goal of increasing on his 61 to 19.
Yeah.
Those numbers just sound so weird to me.
Yeah.
Or in the Senate, where they have they will have 29 after the Long Beach seat is settled. You know, they both want to enlarge on their majorities. And if something is questionable on the ballot, like ACA 12 would be, you know, it's no certainty the voters are there yet. They're getting closer and closer by Pew polling nationally. We've seen major decline in support. Yeah,
I was going to ask you what the polling on this,
Seen state polls. But it was the latest Pew poll was, I believe, 54% in support of the death penalty, 39% in opposition of the death penalty. And so you're getting closer, but you may not be there yet, even in a presidential year. Now, there's another question that if there's going to be an ACA 12, the legislature, unlike initiative supporters, can put it on the primary ballot in March of 2020. All other initiatives go to November automatically now. That's a newer law, SB 202.
Okay.
Well, from a legislative perspective, they don't want it on November.
No.
Because that's actually when members are up. And most of these members are going to win their primary election. So maybe...
But the vulnerable ones will be up in November.
Right. Well, yeah. They'll all be up in November. Will voters remember the death penalty discussion if it fails, let's say, in March? You know, will they remember that and hold it against a member because they helped put it on the ballot? I don't know. I also don't know whether or not voters will accept an argument by a vulnerable member, I voted to let the voters decide, which is their argument. I wrote today, it's I voted for it before I voted against it. I think that was the war by somebody said that.
So
it was John Kerry. And, you know, so I don't really think that voters are going to accept. I passed this. You know, this
so that you can,
constitutional amendment to remove Section 27 of Article 1 of the Constitution. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to vote against it.
Yeah.
I just don't see that carrying weight. What's the problem with March 3rd of 2020? Who's going to be on the ballot from California? Aside from all the legislative races, what's the one other big race?
Is that Kamala Harris?
Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris on Wednesday.
Where does she come down on this?
She said that she supported Gavin Newsom's actions on Wednesday. Hmm. And she said that professionally she has always opposed the death penalty.
Also, she's trying to do both sides.
But
don't give me
critics
that.
Of her say she personally opposed it, but she didn't intervene when her prosecutors were not trying to stop it from happening.
Yeah, I don't like this both sides bullshit. Hey, Francisco J. Alvarez, 48 years old, convicted in Kern County, shook a 5-month-old baby to death and 2 years later fatally beat a 4-year-old child. If you want to kill this piece of shit, I don't really care.
Do you want me to start reading the exonerated folks? That's
maybe,
a SACB article.
Maybe you should. Maybe
you know?
I'll
put them in the nooner. But, I mean, yeah. And, I mean, that's, you know, that's when you want to say, we're going to think objectively, should the state kill? Gavin Newsom's position is that the state should not kill. Kamala Harris's position is the state shouldn't kill. John Chung's position
except that when she's in a position to do something about it, she'll decline to do so for political reasons
or legal reasons.
Nay.
I mean, it's the law. So, but the question would be with Kamala stepping out on Wednesday to say, "Hey, I support what Gavin's doing. This is really brave. This is the leadership we need. This is what I've always believed needed to be done." Might there be a wink, wink? Don't let a repeal go on the ballot.
Go on the ballot with me.
Because March is what's important. March in California is what's important for Kamala.
Yeah.
Whether it's for president or vice president, She wants those delegates.
We're getting pretty close to an hour here.
They fly by when we're talking.
Yeah, they fly by when we're talking. Thanks for dealing with my spiciness. I think
let's talk party financial status.
Yeah,
because we teased that one.
Go for it.
So last night was a deadline for parties because of the special elections in Senate District 1, Senate District 33. The California Democratic Party between February 9th and March 9th, I'm sorry, February 10th and March 9th, raised $2 million and spent $1.6 million. It has cash on hand of $12.1 million. You know. Now, $12.1 million, remember that number, folks. The California Republican Party raised $548,415, which actually sounds pretty good. That's, you know, 1/4 of what the Dems raised, but that's kind of the legislative proportion. They spent $257,749 with an ending cash of $226,598. However, $226,598 in cash, they had $376,005 in debt.
They're upside down.
They are upside down by $150,000. And that's literal debt. That's not like some phantom debt. Candidates have phantom debt because a candidate says, I'm giving my campaign $100,000 as a loan with hopes that they're going to raise money if they win from special interests.
Yeah.
They never see that money again, or it's rare. This is real debt to their consultants and their print shops, their law firm. Let me tell you, law firms don't write down bills. I mean, they write down bills, but they don't forgive them.
Yeah.
You know? There is no pardon, if you will, because I now remember that word. No pardon of legal bills.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, here we go. Quick lightning round for you, okay?
Yeah.
California Supreme Court rules buying airtime was not a vested contract and thus could be eliminated in pension reform.
Right. So the thought was that buying
airtime... Okay, so if you bought the airtime, do you still get it?
Yes.
Okay.
So on a going forward basis after the Jerry Brown backed pension reform, employees that come into state service after working somewhere else were previously allowed to buy up to 5 years to add on to their pension. The thought is you liquidate your 401k and you buy 5 years, yeah, which is far more valuable than your 401k. I mean, right, a pension just is a defined benefit versus defined contributions, much more. So the argument by labor was that ability to buy airtime was a vested right, a contractual right gained at the time of initial employment. So somebody that's turning 50 this year, who started working for the state at age 30, they could buy 5 years. They said that what matters is what the law was when I was hired. California Supreme Court said, no, that's not a vested right. Unlike your pension itself, the ability to buy airtime is not a vested
right. It's not like a promise set in stone.
But this is opening up a bigger discussion of what are vested rights, what can change. There's a case down in San Diego right now over this very issue. It's what's called the California rule.
Yeah, and the fear has always been like the actual defined benefit is a vested right, and that's always been the talking point, right? Always been the sacred chalice that we're protecting.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and even the rates. I mean, the rates themselves. So I have almost 20 years in CalPERS as a 2% at 60, like the lowest possible benefit. Because I work for a nonprofit, but under the law, we represent all public agencies. The debate would be, can you change that rate, which the legislature did not do, but can you in the future, as some local agencies have done or have tried to do, can you change that rate for existing employees as opposed to saying, okay, you came in under one system, and that one system, that rate is going to be the same for your career? Or can we say, you've been working here 10 years, you'll have this calculation for the first 10 years, and then years thereafter, you have a different formula. So it's comp, pension law is always complicated, but this is definitely an issue to watch, and we'll be back to this, I'm sure, in future What a Weeks.
Okay, a couple more for you. We're at an hour and 1 minute here, so I've got a couple more for you. 30 seconds, okay? Push back to Gavin's housing and transportation proposal.
Well, you know, when the budget was presented to the legislature, the governor's proposal to say that the gas tax dollars for transportation, the governor said, we're going to tie that to the cities and counties that are actually meeting their housing element goals.
And that means, are you zoning appropriately for diversity of income in neighborhoods? Is that right?
It doesn't require construction, because that's obviously requires private investment.
Right.
But are you zoning and planning? Now, the city of Encinitas actually had a local ballot measure that blocks the city council from zoning in many cases. So they're saying, wait a minute.
We can't do this.
How can you say that we're not going to get gas tax dollars, which the voters were told?
Well, then the voters they should go back to the voters and say, hey, you do want to think twice about this.
I think that's a discussion. So what Gavin did this week is say, okay, we're going to hold off on implementing that until 2023. So he's giving a boatload of money for planning and zoning, you know, because and zoning is a lot of CEQA work. Back to CEQA.
They've been nudging cities and counties along on this for decades. You know, this isn't about, oh, we don't have the resource. I mean, maybe it is, but this isn't about like they need encouragement or they need more resources. This is about NIMBYism. This is about the haves and the have-nots. This is about people. Just like with what we saw with the college admission scam, this is about people hoarding dreams. Yep. This is about people hoarding opportunity. And so, we've been doing the carrot for so long. I think it's time for a stick.
Right. But what the governor's elected statewide, look statewide. What are local? What are legislators elected to protect?
Yeah, local.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
So Scott Weiner from San Francisco is very much, you know, a proponent of such an action, because San Francisco, well, number one, doesn't do much zoning.
Yeah.
Because they're built out. But number two, they do actually do a lot of infill. So,
gotcha.
They want the transportation dollars, and to the extent other areas aren't going to take the transportation dollars, that means more money.
They say, hey, more for us.
Exactly. Because the tax is going to bring in what the tax brings in.
Yeah.
It's about how it's distributed.
All right, brother, we're at an hour and 5 minutes and I got to catch a flight. Any last thoughts?
No, I think it's been a great What a Week. And we have like five more things
that,
because it has been
over
one of those weeks.
Yeah.
But we'll be back on these mics.
Yeah, we'll be back on these mics. Don't forget to tweet us or email us if you have a topic that you want us to cover. We love the interactive aspect of this. Quickly, if you're watching this, you see that we're both drinking out of the Nooner mugs. And I guess the question would be, are you going to get one? Are you one of Scott's favorites? He got 144. They're gonna be put out there to the building. And maybe you'll get one, maybe you won't.
We'll just have to see.
Thanks for tuning in. It's Sacktown Talks by the Nooner. Thanks.